the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals, your hometown team. And my co-host is, as is pretty much as always the case, is Seth Cox from AvengerTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And Seth, doesn't it feel like the season and kind of the entire calendar year, everything's coming to a head, and we're walking into a last 6 weeks of the season, which are going to be disastrous. Isn't that kind of what it feels like right now?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like everything that you expected to be okay is not, and now more than anything, the entire thing's crumbling.
Yeah. And so this is basically a disaster show. We know that the Cardinals lost on Monday Night Football, 38-10 to the San Francisco 49ers. There was a lot being said, not only on social media, but in the TV broadcast about Kyler Murray and Colt McCoy. We have the, you know, Benjamin thing from Hard Knocks. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Very interesting is that what shows up on Wednesday night for that. Seeming like the Cardinals quit at the end of the game. There's a Sean Coogler thing where they fire their offensive line coach. They release some players. There's more players injured. Ay, ay, ay. And they've got another game this week on Thanksgiving week, which has been a terrible week for Cardinals football traditionally for the last several years. It's not been good. So let's go ahead and get started on episode 382, where we talk about basically all the problems that are going on with the Cardinals, starting with Colt McCoy and Kyler Murray. Do we have a Colt and Kyler problem? Let's talk about that starting now. There was talk. So the report came out that Kyler wasn't going to play, and then he's probably going to sit out through the bye week, and that Colt McCoy is going to play. John Gamadoro comes out and says that he thinks that the team prefers Colt McCoy to Kyler Murray. On the ESPN broadcast, in the pregame and the broadcast, there's a lot of discussion about just the strengths of Colt McCoy, the things that he's doing huddle-wise and at the line of scrimmage and communication, and that almost suggesting, which if all the things that have been said about Kyler, I can believe this maybe the most, that he tries or acts like the smartest in the room, and therefore maybe is doing too much at the line of scrimmage, or rather that he's not doing enough, or that there's things he's clearly not doing that Colt is, which is why they keep bringing things up about that. We know that Cliff Kingsbury talked about just, you know, the work ethic, the Colt McCoy's. He's in early, he's out late, which people took to be a shot at Kyler saying that he wasn't doing those things. I didn't necessarily believe that, because if there's one thing we know about Kyler, he puts in the time. But do you think that there is a, like, within, there's, do we have a Kyler Murray problem, and is Colt McCoy the answer to that problem for the foreseeable future?
I can tell you that I don't know if they have a Kyler Murray problem, but I can guarantee you that Colt McCoy is not the answer. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, Colt McCoy is really good at what he does, being a backup quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you look at his two games, they're virtually the same statistically, and the outcomes were wildly different. And the reason why is because when Colt plays bad teams, he's able to manage the game and make, you know, up throw or two a game. When he plays good teams, he's not good enough to make consistent plays. And so if you want a guy that is a complete game manager, I mean, not in even the Jimmy Garoppolo, like, but like you're talking in the, you know, I'm trying to think of anybody currently.
follow the game plan quarterback perfectly. Like, he will stick to the game plan exactly as written. But yeah, he's, and what it is that McCoy just isn't skilled enough to rally a team that's behind schedule, that's either behind or behind the sticks in terms of the game. When he beat the 49ers last year, 31-17, it was the work of the defense primarily, because they had the early fumble and they ended up fumbling twice, and that it was basically 17-0 at the end of the first quarter without Colt McCoy having to do much work, and that was all she wrote. But when Carolina forced the turnover, when Hassan Reddick hit him and he fumbled, and then they go for it on fourth down, don't get, and they get behind 14-0, that was it. They couldn't come back from that. And so as long as the Cardinals were okay defensively, and that, you know, the first half was competitive, but the second half fell apart because the defense wasn't able to maintain the same level. And if we look at the Rams game, the defense did really well because they didn't have to do much. They took away John Wolford's first read, and that was all she wrote. The offense was Cooper Kupp going into that game. The Cardinals know how to limit Cooper Kupp, and then Cooper Kupp got hurt. So the Rams offense, the atrocious offense, didn't do anything in the Cardinals, and so the Cardinals were able to do things offensively, just stay on schedule. And that's the thing. Colt McCoy will follow a game plan very, very well, but he isn't skilled enough to rally you or to basically run and try and play off schedule.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, when they fall behind, it's basically over. And that's again, not a shot at Colt. That's just who he is. I mean, a 36-year-old quarterback that's 9 games, I think, under 500 for his career. That's if that's the guy you're leaning on. And by the way, he started like 25 games in his career. So it's not like we're talking about a Carson Palmer who'd started 125 games for a bad franchise. We're talking about a guy that's not good enough to start for probably any other team in the league right now. But is probably one of the 3 best backups in the NFL, maybe after, you know, Jacoby Brissett and Taylor Heineke.
Yeah. The question is now, because there was talk that if the Cardinals had won this game, and, you know, if they'd won, they'd beaten the Chargers this next week, and Colt McCoy goes 3-0, they wouldn't go back to Kyler. What are the chances that would have happened? If, now granted, it didn't happen, but would the Cardinals have put themselves in a situation where they would be starting McCoy over a healthy Murray?
I mean, unless you just thought that you've got a great defense that can keep you in games, and McCoy limits the amount of variance in play. But I mean, like I said, if you want a guy that's going to get you 4.6 yards per play every game, you go with Colt McCoy. If you want a guy that's going to give you, you know, 6.4 one game has bad games where his bad games are 4.6 yards per play, then you've got to play with Kyler Murray. And so, you know, that's the thing, is like, I don't know if the Cardinals win yesterday with Kyler Murray. I know that they're competitive, and they weren't competitive yesterday with Colt McCoy, and that should have been the end of the conversation. But I mean, these guys got to get their, I mean, it's sports talk, it's sports talk radio, it's daily stuff. They've got to get their clicks and their views and their downloads in, and what better way to do it? I mean, just remember last week, Dan Bickley literally said that, you know, Colt McCoy was going to follow in the line of Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer as resurrecting his career in the desert at a late age and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, Dan, you haven't had a good take since you tried to say Max Hall was the future. Like, just
and there's a wildly different thing, is that Kurt Warner was an MVP at one point. Okay, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Carson Palmer, one of the most talented quarterbacks in the entire league. Colt McCoy, honestly, I think he was 10 years too early for the NFL.
Well, and
he came in with that shoulder injury. But had he done what he did at Texas, modern day, he would have, as a young quarterback playing in this NFL, and he hadn't hurt his shoulder. I think he would be a very, very intriguing, fun quarterback in the NFL. But he's 36 years old.
Well, and like I said, the biggest thing with him was when he hurt his shoulder, because he has no juice on the ball whatsoever. I mean, you saw it in the game yesterday. I was actually shocked he didn't throw more interceptions, because there were a couple of
throws where you were like, oh my gosh, what was the one out that he threw to AJ?
Yeah. And there were a couple where guys were right next to the guys that caught the ball, and you're like, I don't think he was paying attention. unless there's this idea that people just don't want to play with Kyler, which nobody's ever said that, which is always the funny thing to me about locker room talk, because it's literally never been something that's said by anybody that's left the organization.
Right.
Then this is just conjecture from sports media people that get paid to get, to stir up drama and have these things, be in the news.
My question, though, is of all the things that they keep saying or suggesting about Kyler, which of those things that are you suggesting that you think are the closest to the truth, or at least that what are the parts about what they're saying that Kyler can improve upon? Not saying that he's bad at, but
well, like I've always said, I think he's just a very, enigmatic guy. And he's a guy that tends to not be great at dealing with other people, which, isn't a great thing for a quarterback, but it's more about the fact that you've got a guy that expects everybody to raise their level of play and their level of dedication to the grind that he does. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And he's just not great about how he goes about it. He's a mercurial guy. He's been a guy that's a loner. And so I think people take that as he's not, a team guy or this or that. And it's like he's just not a rah-rah guy, which is tough, because that's what people want out of their quarterbacks.
Yeah, the special fans want to see that. They want to see their guy but there's literally nothing Kyler can do to win things over, because before this year he was too sullen and sulky on the sidelines. Now he's fired up, and so now we're doing that to criticize him. That if there is something, if there's one thing that sort of, and the reason why I'll believe it more is because especially these broadcast guys on the TV, on the telecast, they are in production meetings with the situation, and especially the ones that are former players who still have connections in around the NFL, guys like Larry Fitzgerald, and RG3, and guys like that, Steve Young, maybe less Steve Young. He's been out of the league for so long. But if there is one thing that perhaps Kyler does to a fault, is like when he gets to the line of scrimmage, that perhaps he's not as good or as disciplined at executing the game plan. And so he sees something and thinks he's got something better. And now Cliff has praised him for things like this, but maybe if there is one thing that I think that is the situation, it perhaps that Kyler only trusts Cliff's scheme and plan to a certain point. and perhaps wishes that he had a little more ownership with it. If we go back to that week seven game when he shouted "Calm the F down" to Cliff, it was because Cliff he wanted to control the situation, and Clyde was like, "Trust me, we've got this. I've got this. Calm the F down. We were gonna get it done." And maybe it's as simple as that. Kyler is not following as disciplined the game plan and changing more things, perhaps doing more changes at the line of scrimmage than he needs.
Yeah, and maybe that's just what it is right now, and they need to address that and figure out how to do it. But, I mean, if you're fine with the Colt McCoy experience, then you're going to enjoy a lot more blowouts this season.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about that game yesterday. There's not much good to talk about, but mainly, did the Cardinals quit? And is that the problem that we're facing now at the end of the season? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. The Cardinals lose to the 49ers 38-10. They keep it close for the first half, 17-10, but then they give up three touchdowns. Jimmy Garoppolo throws four touchdown passes. Even interestingly enough, I think he's done it four times in his career high. Three of them have come against the Cardinals. But more importantly, down the stretch, it looked like there were some business decisions being made on George Kittle's second touchdown of the game. Antonio Hamilton in particular pulled up and didn't make the move. Buda Baker, when asked if he thought they fought to the end, he did not. This would be the first game that we have seen where the Cardinals did not push and compete throughout. Now, granted, you're in Mexico, you're getting beat down. Honestly, it's super easy once you're down 21 points that to risk your body to put a hit on a guy who, when they're just going to score two plays later, I get that. But have we hit? One of the things that we could say about Cliff Kingsbury and everything is that the Cardinals were competing, they're playing hard the entire game. We didn't see that. Does this mean we're at the beginning of the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where it starts is the effort level and to see the team give up. And like I said, I think, you know, to kind of go back to it, I think a lot of it comes from a lot of guys realize that Colt's not going to be the guy that leads them back in a situation where they're down two scores. It's just not his game, man. And so you saw guys like Antonio Hamilton and
this, we have to remember that Antonio Hamilton is a guy who has no problem mixing it up and hitting guys.
Right. And so we saw guys make business decisions and that's just an embarrassing indictment of this whole culture that's, you know, all of a sudden in prime time on Wednesday nights, right? With Hard Knocks. And so, you know, it feels like the beginning of the end just because of that situation, because you can't have guys quitting in the game. You know, Buda made a huge mistake in that game and gave up a touchdown to George Kittle, but he still consistently was the guy making plays, flying around late in the game when they're down three scores. And like, that's what it's about. It's not about, the guys that lead when things are going well. It's about the guys that play at that level and that when things aren't and they're still on the field.
I will say this, what happened with the Cardinals is exactly how the 49ers build their game plan. We've seen this as football fans a lot. They're getting blown out. The opponent is running the ball extremely well. It takes the soul out of a defense when you can't stop. Once they've got a significant lead, or you know they've got a double digit lead, and then you can't stop the run after that, it it is life suck. It drains the entire life energy of a team because, and then you just start playing through the motions. You go through the motions and maybe that's, I don't know what to think about that, but it was the first time when we saw the Cardinals just get jack stomped, and it was very reminiscent of the playoff game last year, right? And I think the difference is, even in a situation where they're getting their pants beat off, usually when Kyler's playing, he's still trying to compete. And whether it was the Colt wasn't trying to compete, he just was, he couldn't, or the players around him were causing weren't giving an adequate effort. I will say this, for everything that people say about Kyler, Kyler's teams don't quit except in that playoff game. And I'll say that. That was demoralizing and was embarrassing. But that's what happened Monday night. The defense, I think, just got tired of failing and just went through the motions through the most of the second half. Especially because the offense was doing nothing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you don't want this to become a divisive thing as well, where offense versus defense is at each other's throat, where guys aren't on the same page. And that's, like you said, that's the problem. And it feels like that's where this is coming to, right? Is that it's coming to a point where this team has two different sides of the ball instead of a team, and that's what you want to avoid more than anything in this situation.
Now, moving forward, and here's the other part that comes with that: more guys got hurt, and so it's just demoralizing. Is there a way for them to get back? Like, we know they're basically wiped out. They're basically eliminated from any scenario. Like, with the Seahawks and the 49ers both having tiebreakers over the Cardinals already, and them being two wins behind both those teams, we're talking about a 3-win difference to leapfrog one of those teams, either in the division or in the conference. And since they're the 12th team right now, they're number 12, you've got the Seahawks now, because the 49ers in first place are the 7th seed. You've got Washington at number 8. You've got Atlanta, you've got Detroit, you've got Green Bay, then you got the Cardinals, then you got the Saints. And they're all kind of bunched up together right there. But the fact that they can't, almost impossible now to pass either the Seahawks or the 49ers, it's going to be incredibly difficult to make the postseason at all, because if the Cardinals go 5-1 their final 6 games, the only way for them to leapfrog either the 49ers or the Seahawks is if they go 2-5 in their last 7 games. And we can pretty much with a certainty say that's not going to happen either way, that the Cardinals aren't going to go 5-1, and that the 49ers or Seahawks won't go 2-5 in that same period.
Yeah, and that's what makes this difficult, is that this was not the end, but it was virtually the end, right?
Yes, they are on life support right now. I mean, technically, they're not mathematically eliminated, and that's what you preach to your team. But the reality is, even if they turn things around, so even if they're 4-7 now, they would basically have to win 6 of their last 6 games, period, to make the playoffs. Viably, even in a bad NFC, probably it's going to take 10 wins. And they have 6 games left. They'd have to go 6-0. There is nothing about this team that says they can go 6-0, since they have yet to win consecutive games all year. Oh, my goodness. And so, I mean, when it comes down to it, I think this is the game that's beginning to bury the organization. I think it's where things are coming loose. and this is where everything's going to unravel from here on out. Now, maybe they pull a few couple of games out of here, but I think we can point to this game as the unraveling point, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see, to me, about the future, which is, I know we're getting into shortly, but that's more than anything what it's going to tell me about this team and this franchise and where this is heading still, because you're talking about guys that quit in this game, and now you're expecting to see them come back and play hard. I mean, we're talking about, like you said, they're not mathematically eliminated. There's six games left. They can still compete, but they're going to have to sell out to do so.
Yep. Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Do the Cardinals have a culture problem? We have another incident. Weird thing that goes on. Sean Coogler is fired. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Sean Coogler fired. Offensive line coach, running game coordinator, by and large, one of the more beloved coaches on that staff. Something happened Sunday night in Mexico. Monday morning, he was fired. He did not coach. And he's no longer on the staff permanently. Something happened. This is the second week in a row that there's a firing.
Yeah, behind the scenes.
Kind of behind the scenes. We got Ian and Benjamin last week. We got Sean Coogler this week. That now makes two coaches from this year's staff that have been let go or moved. So James Saxon had the legal issues in Indiana with the domestic battery charges. He was placed on leave and then resigned last month before his final sentencing was in. And so the Cardinals have been down a coach that way. Now Coogler's out for the rest. He's gone, which leaves them down their offensive line coach. They have to shift the staff a little bit. And this is weird, but it feels like things are starting to bleed off the field now. So we're getting they've been mistake prone on the field, and now there's stuff happening off the field, and I'm not 100% convinced. Now this hasn't been reported anywhere, but the Cardinals also released three players. And so some incident that happened in Mexico. Then they release Jonathan Ward off of injured reserve. He was healthy when he came back. That one kind of makes sense maybe because they signed Corey Clement and Darrell Williams might be on his way back. That you can think. Then they cut an offensive lineman from the practice squad, Gene DeLance, which they cut guys pretty much every week. But then the one that makes me wonder if those three were also related to whatever happened with Coogler is Michael Dogby, the defensive lineman, because while he was cut from the roster before last week's game, he was re-signed to the practice squad. I'm sure that was a numbers game. He was re-signed to the practice squad last week and then elevated playing the game. And after you're given a standard elevation, you simply revert to the practice squad. There's no clearing of waivers. And they cut him from the practice squad after he had just played. After he'd been with the team for 3.5 years, after the Mexico game, they decided they were done. That's, to me, that feels, and we're not going to hear about it. I just wonder if all of this
is related
somehow.
Well, so, I mean, the two things that we know are there's curfews that these guys have to get to, and so you wonder if a coach was involved with that, right? Like, if Coogler either, you know, and again, we're speculating. We're not trying to be nefarious or say anything negative. So, like, did Coogler potentially know that they were late and try to hide it, maybe? You know, or was he out with them and was that group of guys late? I mean, again, we don't know who hangs out with whom on this roster necessarily. So, again, we're just kind of spitballing on what would make sense because, like you said, the biggest thing that outside of the Coogler thing, obviously, that just doesn't make any sense is why cut a guy that you were getting ready to put back on the practice squad, right?
Right. And so it wasn't, he was cut from the practice squad.
Right. Exactly.
After he had just played in the game, and he'd played in 10 games this season. He'd been with the team for 3.5 years. And so it just feels like, okay, if they were done with him last week, it would have made sense. But then they re-signed him, and they activated him, and he played him again. Then you cut him. That's weird.
Right. And like you said, when he was already reverted back to the practice squad. So it's just a strange situation where it's really hard to understand exactly what's going on. And so that's why, I mean, I think in the end, you have to wait and see if any story comes out. I mean, it's also interesting that, you know, 2 weeks later, we still really don't have anything on the Eno Benjamin situation, right?
Yeah.
Like we know.
And let's go with the Hard Knocks take here is that on the PHNX Cardinals podcast, one of the directors from HBO had said, because everyone was asking about, they asked him about the Eno Benjamin thing. Now, when the director guy talks, it felt like he was overselling it. He used shocking. He said, watch. Now, initially, his response was, watch show 3. And then he talked about Eno Benjamin with the cutting. He's like, that was shocking to us. I want to know, because what everyone is doing is, oh, do you know what it is? Was there something shocked behind the scenes? I think the director actually meant that to see a fan favorite like Eno Benjamin cut was cut. Now we're hearing Bob McManaman said to Monday night that Steve Trout, who is one of the directors, said that there will not be any segment on Eno Benjamin because there was no footage of it.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. It's like it's odd.
Especially because doesn't HBO have literally footage of everything?
Right. And so it while we're not saying anything or like anything like that, it does really seem a little nefarious, doesn't it, that Coogler was cut or fired before the game. Like that's kind of absurd.
Okay, he's like, what was it? Like, how bad was it?
Right, and so that's why we can speculate a lot of things. Don't get me wrong, but that one is different because that's like not just a coach, but like a coordinator, one of the kind of leaders in the organization. And he was just straight up like sent home before one of the most pivotal games of the season. So like you said, like, I mean, we're just talking, but like it had to have been, like you said, bad if it prompted that to be done immediately.
Is this something showing that there's a culture problem with this team? This has been asked a million times with, you know, when Steve Keim had the DUI, Ron Miniger had the DUI. He's one of the guys in one of the executives in the front office. Then you get the James Saxon thing. Now you get the Sean Coogler thing. Are the Cardinals, is this an organizational thing, or is this just another unfortunate thing? It's just it's been pouring on the Cardinals all year. Like, haven't been able to. They're making mistakes on the field. There's misstepping off the field. The whole Kyler Murray drama, starting off with the comments made come from the front office to the contract, to the injuries, to Chandler Jones, to Patrick Peterson, to the play on the field. It's just been one thing after another, and the Cardinals can't get out of their own way. I don't know what to think about all of this, but other than let's get this year done and and it feels like you almost have to blow it all up. And this is the first time I've really gotten to the point where, yeah, you can't, despite the extensions, they're going to have to do it. And the part that we're going to be pound the table for is Steve Keim better be on the way out as well, because they've had tons of injuries, yes, but his teams that he builds aren't good. They're not good enough. I mean, they're talented enough, but they're not good enough.
Right. And so that's what you have to look at. And you know, Kyle Odegaard, who worked for the Arizona Cardinals, literally tweeted out last night, you know, about the fact that this is a Steve Keim issue. You know, they don't have the talent to compete with the 49ers. I you know, the coaching aspect of it with the Seahawks might, you know, that I can be persuaded that they're as talented as the Seahawks. But I mean, you can just look at it last night. They're nowhere near as talented as the 49ers. And then from there, you know, you look at it, there's a lot of questions about his roster management, his investment in, and how he is utilizing and spending picks. And it's interesting when you talk about, you know, how he's done things, because when you look at San Francisco, you know, they're giving up their first round picks for offensive linemen and quarterbacks, not wide receivers. And you and I both love the Hollywood Brown trade. So this isn't a shot at Brown by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, you look at what the 49ers have done just the last 5 years or 4 years in the Cliff Kingsbury era. And they've, you know, they've drafted three defensive linemen, two edge players, and three offensive linemen in the top 75. The Cardinals have Josh Jones and Zach Allen, both day three picks, but that fell inside the top 75. But like both are not are day three.
They're day third, two picks. We're third round picks.
Third round picks. Thank you. That's what I was trying to say. Both day two picks, but both third round picks, you know. And it's interesting that when you look at it, their offensive and defensive line are issues. And it's like, well, the investment just doesn't seem like it's truly been there. And it's not that they haven't tried to get guys, but when you draft true day three guys like Rashard Lawrence and Leckie Fotu and Michael Manet and you know, Mason Cole and these guys, And then they're not ready in year one, so you have to go fill their spots that you drafted them to play with veterans, you know, Corey Peters, who we both loved and thought the world of. But, you know, a Corey Peters is getting significant snaps because you're drafting guys on day three that aren't ready to contribute. And then all of a sudden, those veterans get hurt, and now all of a sudden you have to play the rookies that aren't ready, and then they get beaten up. And basically, and this is the part that's tough, is that they basically become useless because they're so beaten down by the time it's their time that now all of a sudden the cycle perpetuates itself again. You know, they get released and then they bring in this, you know, new guys on day three, and then those guys aren't ready, so then you got to go sign, you know, Jonathan Ledbetter. Again, nice guy, good player, but why is Jonathan Ledbetter on this roster? Like, it's because guys like Rashard Lawrence can't stay healthy, and Leckie Fotu's just not,
he's doing nothing, he's just a right body out there.
Right, he's just not good enough. And so you got to go get a guy like Jonathan Ledbetter, who, again, there's nothing wrong with having a Jonathan Ledbetter on your roster, but he's a guy that should be getting 5 to 7 rotational snaps a game. And instead, he's a guy that's playing significant minutes because you don't have any talent. And it's just, it's just the perpetuation of the same things. You know, I talked about Antonio Hamilton a little earlier and the disappointment of his effort level, but you can get away with not investing in corners, right? And they really, really haven't. I mean, Byron Murphy is their highest drafted corner since Patrick Peterson, which was 11 years, well, technically would be 12 NFL drafts ago, which is a long ass time in the NFL. And so you can get away with that if you have a super dynamic pass rush, right? Like if you invest in the pass rush. But the last edge rusher they drafted was, I mean, I guess Chandler Jones in 2016 when they traded a second round pick for him. Before that, it was Marcus Golden, you know. And then, yes, I know they drafted two this year, but are we really expecting, you know, Myjai Sanders and Cameron Thomas to be impact players in year one? And so, you know, it's just been a weird way of roster building. We've talked about the off-ball linebackers. We've talked about the investments at wide receiver over and over again. You know, if they're going to move on from Cliff, which, I mean, like you said, for the first time, you're like, hey, if it's got to be done, it's got to be done. It has to start with Steve Keim.
Yes, totally. Coming to next one of the Rise Up Seaweed podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the weather. There's more injuries to talk about. When are they coming back? That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaweed. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray's out. Hollywood Brown is not back yet. He didn't get activated from an injured reserve. Rondell Moore got hurt during the game. Greg Dortch got hurt during the game. Colt McCoy even got a little banged up in the game, although he seemed to kill you. When are these guys going to come back? The talk that Kyler probably is not going to come back till after the bye is interesting. And I kind of get it. They want him to be able to go all out. I don't know if that's a Kyler, more Kyler of more organization, because they trust Colt McCoy. But it's always interesting because Cliff in particular, this organization, try to be coy with it. Like they say, we'll see. He's made a lot of progress. Hollywood Brown said, oh, I told you I would be back in 4 weeks. And now there's talk that probably Hollywood Brown might be out in another week, and that would put him coming back after the bye, which fits the original timeline of the injury. But now we add Rondell Moore and Greg Dortch to this list, and it looks like Rondell Moore probably will miss – he won't miss too much time, meaning he's probably going to miss at least this game. Maybe he'll be back after the bye. The hits keep coming. When are the Cardinals finally going to be healthy? That's kind of the case here. When do you if you had to guess, do you think Kyler comes back this week? Do you think Hollywood comes back this week? Or do you think they go with the, let's wait till they're fully healthy, considering where we're at in the standings, and wait till after the bye?
Yeah, I think they wait till after the bye based on the results of the last, you know, of the earlier games this season. I think if they would have one in Mexico, I think they would have played this week. But I think them not winning, and now, you know, while there is urgency, it's like you said, it's basically now like, hey, if we can get these guys back and healthy for the last six games, maybe that's a better reality than trying to push them forward and them getting re-injured or something of that nature. That's what I think they're going with at this point, and that it'll be New England when they come back? Who do they play first?
It would be New England. It'll be in New England when they come back.
Yeah, and so I think that's where we'll see them again for the first time.
That makes sense. I'm guessing that if Dortch has to miss, that we're probably hitting after the bye as being when they get a whole bunch of guys back. Kyler, Hollywood, Moore, maybe even guys like Daryl Williams, Rashard Lawrence. It's very interesting to see just how this team keeps taking hits with injuries across the board. And we'll see if Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons, who both, you know, had moments where they were in pain, end up missing much time. Byron Murphy, DJ Humphreys are two other guys that haven't come back yet. Whether they get held out until after the bye. These are all critical pieces. It's almost comical this year, the number of injuries that they are sustaining.
Right, and I mean, no team's lost more to injuries than the Cardinals. No team outside of the Rams has lost more along the offensive line than the Cardinals. And all of that, you know, results in what we're seeing from not just the results, but sometimes the effort. Like I said, I truly do feel bad for a guy like Lasita Smith, who I think can be a good pro. I know they liked him, but he wasn't ready, man. And now you see that result. And you know, he didn't play too poorly against the Rams, but he didn't look great in this one. You know, say the same thing about Josh Jones, who people know I love. He didn't look great. And so it's tough, man. I just don't know where they go from here. And it's interesting because something that you and I have talked about a lot is that injured players typically stay injured, right? And the NFL is a tough game. And so a guy like Hollywood, who, again, you and I both love the move. We're not criticizing it, but it's not surprising that he's missing games. He missed games every year in Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
Rashard Lawrence, who you mentioned, missed a ton of time while he was in college. You know, guys like Kyler and DJ, it's a little more surprising, but, you know, it isn't surprising when guys that have been injured most of their career or throughout their career get injured again. And so it'll be interesting to kind of watch it play out. But if I'm the Cardinals, I give them till after the bye week. And again, it's unlikely, so I'm not saying it's going to happen. So I just want people to understand that when I say this. But at the same time, you know, maybe you give yourself a chance to go 6-0 and finish the season at 9-8 if you don't beat the Chargers. And you know, whether they do or don't, I don't think it changes when and how you bring those guys back. But if, you know, if you aren't able to beat the Chargers and you go to 4-7.
4-8.
You know, 4-8, excuse me, yes. You can win 6 in a row and or it would be 5 in a row and finish 9-8. And like, yeah, maybe you don't make the playoffs, but if you finish 9-8 and right, you know, and you're chomping at the bit for a playoff spot, I guess that's the best thing that can happen from this year, right?
Yeah, I guess that would be something to build on at least.
Right. And then it gives you, like I said, my biggest thing now is to see who shows up.
Yeah.
Like who's committed to this. And you know, I was impressed with DeAndre. I know people would get upset with DeAndre about the taunting, but in the end, I mean, really, his effort level and his engagement was high. And that's what you want to see. Buddha's was the same way. You know, the younger guys like Zaven and Isaiah, I wasn't super worried about them checking out. But other players you do worry about. And I'm, you know, guys like Buddha and D-Hop, that's who you want to follow and make sure that they're the ones, you know, kind of leading the charge.
Coming up next on the Resips here at Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's wrap up the show talking about the Cardinals and the Chargers this weekend before they have the bye week. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Cardinals play the Chargers this weekend. I can't figure out the Chargers. I try to look at some statistical, you know, patterns.
I don't think anybody else can either.
If there's one thing we could look at with the Cardinals, there is one money stat on them every single week. They're 4-0 if their opponents rush for less than 100 yards. They're 0-6 if they hit 100. That's the money stat there. And that is due probably to circumstances, but that's been 100% consistent. The Chargers have won games by giving up 200 yards rushing. They've won games, several games, without reaching 100 yards themselves. This team makes no sense to me. They have so much talent. They've been rocked by injuries. Obviously, Joey Bosa's out. They've missed time for Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Rashawn Slater got hurt. They just keep taking hits after hits, but they've been just the Chargers. Like, even the Chargers are really good, and they're not quite good enough. This year, they're impossible to figure out because they lose games when they're playing well, and they win games when they're not. I can't make heads nor tails. But Justin Herbert does not look like the quarterback. Like, Justin Herbert looked like he might be the best quarterback coming out of that draft. Like, amazing. And this year, he's just underwhelming. He's still talented, but his metrics all look much worse than last season.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, once you get film on these guys, it's a little bit different. You know, they've got a talented running back in Austin Ekeler who's playing well. He's got about 1,000 yards from scrimmage and 11 total touchdowns on the season. Ironically, wasn't used a whole lot in the passing game in their loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they got beat by the 49ers a couple weeks ago on Sunday Night Football. You know, interesting back-to-back Sunday night games, back to losses. They barely beat Falcons. They got drilled by the Seattle Seahawks, you know, with their bike. They had to go to Denver in a defensive battle, and you're like, what? And they lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars 38-10. Like, so like you said, this team just doesn't make a lick of sense, man. And it's tough. You know, Brandon Staley looks out of his depth, which is interesting because, you know, Cardinals fans love pining for Staley and Herbert. And this year it's like, oh, basically got that, right? Like you said, they've had a ton of injuries, which is unfortunate. Mike Williams injured. Josh Palmer's battled injuries. Keenan Allen, who's, you know, was on a Hall of Fame type path, is injured. So their weapons haven't been there much. You know, Allen played week 1, week 7, and week 11 against Kansas City. Like, so he's played 3 games all year, and none of them have been successive. I'm not going to say he's not going to play against the Cardinals, but I mean, the way it's trended, he probably wouldn't play against the Cardinals, right? He needs a couple weeks to recover. I assume he'll be in the game, though.
But we're probably looking at no Hollywood Brown or Rondale Moore either.
Right. And
or
so,
Zach Ertz. Or...
yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting because all of the talk, and the Chargers are 9th in the AFC. They're a game behind the Jets, which puts them about a game out of the playoffs because the Bengals are 6-4, the Patriots are 6-4. You know, and that AFC West that everybody kind of expected to be good is not good, which I think has helped them more than anything, right? It's kept them relevant because 2 of their wins this season are against AFC West opponents, the Las Vegas Raiders and Denver Broncos, who are both 3-7. One of their wins is against the Cleveland Browns, who are 3-7. their other win is against, well, one of their other wins is against the Houston Texans, who have won one game. You know, their losses to Jacksonville are all to winning teams. So, I mean, what do they do against the Cardinals? Cardinals are not a winning team right now. So how do they come out and play? You know, this last game, we saw what we could do as an 150-yard total offense, but they had 100 yards.
They give up 26 points a game. Not great.
And that's, you know, one of those situations where, you know, invest. And sometimes the investing just doesn't work. I mean, this is a team that's invested in offensive linemen, in defensive linemen.
Cornerback.
Corner, pass rusher. And instead, they're, you know, getting, you know, Joey Bosa's played three games. You know, they're not getting what they need out of the guys they need it from. A couple of guys, you know, ended up being bust. I mean, they're playing Christian Covington, like, who did make the Cardinals roster. you know, Jerry Tillery, you know, never lived up to the hype. And so it just becomes a situation where they have a couple great defensive players that are healthy, and Khalil Mack and Derwin James, literal, like, game-changing type of players. But outside of that, they lack a lot of talent. And it's, you know, it's because you invest in the talent and then the talent either doesn't pan out or gets injured. And then all of a sudden you're scrambling and trying to get guys. They've had some guys regress. Kenneth Murray, Asante Samuel Jr., who were both great last year, haven't been great this year. I mean, they're starting a guy like Kyle Van Noy, who's a nice player. But, I mean, a 31-year-old Kyle Van Noy has as many sacks as you, Jess.
Hey.
And so that's, I mean, that's tough.
In the league.
Right, right. And then they've had a similar situation with the Cardinals. They've had three kickers this year, right? They've had Dustin Hopkins only kick five games, Cameron Dicker, who the Cardinals faced, kicked three games, and something called Taylor Bertolo kicked in two games.
But their kickers have been good.
that is different, right? That's a little different. Yeah, their kickers are 19 for 20. So it's just a matter of inconsistency, and then they've just, like I said, been really, really injured at key positions.
And so if you look at one thing, the Chargers do turn, like, if they turn the ball over. So I looked at their five losses they have this season. Well, and they've turned the ball over, I believe, 9 times. And then in their 5 wins, they also have, like, they did turn the ball over twice in a win over the Falcons, a game that they shouldn't have won, that wacko game. But they, 2, 3, 4. So, the turnover battle. The Cardinals have been good this year about taking the ball away. And so we've got two mediocre teams to bad teams. Okay, the Cardinals are pretty bad, but their wins have come against not good teams. So depends on which team shows up. I expect close game, and who, whichever team protects the football, I think, is going to win this game. And this is one of those games where I think the Cardinals could look good because things go sideways. Like, if they get a turnover or two, because they run the ball terribly. The Chargers run the ball very poorly. They are 30th in yards and yards per attempt this season. And so if the Cardinals get a lead, I think that's kind of the key. It's kind of the key for the Cardinals all the time, is that they're a better team when they have the lead. But it's hard to make. I predicted the Cardinals would win this game when I wrote the preview, but this is also, I also wrote the preview Sunday afternoon before either the Chargers or the Cardinals had even played their games. But there wasn't anything about those games that made me change my mind. This is game or two teams that you don't know what is what, honestly.
Right, and the you spelled out something really intriguing and interesting. And can the Cardinals run the ball if Kyler Murray's not the quarterback?
They haven't been able to do it yet since he came into the league.
That's a legitimate question, because when Kyler game, you look at their numbers, right? So, and I know they're not all wins, but you look at their numbers, 103, 143, 132, 124, 144, 137, 122. In the two games he's missed, 78 and 67. So they can't run the ball without him, it seems like. But the Los Angeles Chargers are maybe the worst rush defense in the NFL. So it's like,
but the Cardinals are playing 3 to 4 backups out right. of their so offensive line.
It's like the opposite of the immovable force, you know, like it's just like, this is a game where like something's got to give, right? The Cardinals aren't able to run the ball when they don't have Kyler Murray, but the Chargers can't stop anybody from running the football. In the last four games, the last four games, 213 yards to the Seahawks, 201 yards to the Falcons, 157 yards to the 49ers, and then 163 yards to the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a running back reach 100 yards rushing for the first time in over a year.
Jeez.
Like, their run defense is awful.
They have 6 games of allowing over 150 yards. 7 games of 130 or more yards. 98. They have 98, 93, and 64 the other three games, but there are.
But they have three. They have three games where they've allowed over 200 rushing.
It's ridiculous.
So, like, that's the thing is, like, if you can run the football and control the tempo of this game, there's a legitimate chance to win. I just don't know if Kyler Murray doesn't play if you can run the football. Like, I'm not saying anything negative in the sense of, like, oh, you know, this team can't win without Kyler. I'm saying legitimately they've not shown that they can run the football if Kyler's not in there.
That's been consistent since he came into the league.
So, you know, that's what it comes down to. Can the Cardinals run the football? If they can run the football, they have a chance to win this game. If they can't run the football, it's going to, like you said, it's going to be a close game. I just don't see how they win it.
Right. What's your score prediction? I've got the Cardinals winning 24-20. Not that I feel confident in that pick at all, because who knows?
I'm going to say the Chargers win 21-18.
Ooh, this is going to be a fun, ugly game this Sunday afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah, as long as it's not 45-10.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast of SR Cardinals Talk on the Web, episode 382. We'll be back again next week after the Chargers and Cardinals play. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.